Good afternoon. You're very welcome to Saturday with Clare Byrne. Coming up, Irish Water to face questioning before a Dáil committee over their 50 million in consultation fees. We'll hear from one of the members of that committee today. Doing business with the Iranians, we hope to talk to a member of the Oireachtas delegation building trade links in Tehran today. And bringing it all back home, how the cards are likely to fall in the local elections in May. But first, the news now with John Finnerty.
Good afternoon. Israeli Army Radio has reported that the country's former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has died in hospital. He was 85 and had been in a comatose condition since suffering a stroke in 2006. The Sheba Hospital near Tel Aviv, where Mr. Sharon was being cared for, is due to hold a news conference about now. A 32-year-old Kilkenny man has been charged with the murder of another man in Tramore, County Waterford last Thursday. Tighe Butler, with an address at Seafield Tramore, was brought before a special sitting of Waterford District Court this afternoon. Our South East correspondent, Damien Tiernan.
25-year-old Michael O'Dwyer from Stonyford in County Kilkenny was visiting Tramore on Thursday with a number of others. He ended up in a house being rented by Tighe Butler, who's also originally from Kilkenny City. Just before 11:30pm on Thursday night, Gardaí and emergency services were called to say a man had been stabbed. Michael O'Dwyer was rushed to hospital, but later died of his injuries. Tighe Butler was arrested at the house and questioned at Tramore Garda Station. This morning, he was charged with the murder of Michael O'Dwyer. He was brought to a special sitting of Waterford District Court this afternoon. The court heard from Detective Sergeant Shay Keevans. The accused, who's unemployed, made no reply when charged. He's been granted free legal aid and remanded in custody to appear again at Waterford District Court next Tuesday. Damien Tiernan, RT News, Waterford.
The PSNI has said that Northern Ireland is facing a road safety emergency after five people were killed in traffic accidents in just over 1 week. In the latest incident, a man was killed in a collision in South Armagh. Brendan Wright of our Northern staff.
With five people killed, the number of road deaths in the new year in the north is already the same as for the whole month of January in 2013. Superintendent David Moore of the PSNI said someone dying on the roads every 48 hours equated to a month's worth of carnage in a little over a week. He said Northern Ireland's New Year's resolution on road safety had been broken already. In the latest incident, a 58-year-old man died after he was hit by a car in South Armagh. The accident happened on the road between Newton Hamilton and Beleaks. A 29-year-old woman who was arrested on suspicion of a number of road traffic offences has been released on bail pending further inquiries. Brendan Wright, RTE News, Belfast.
Clashes are reported to be continuing between Christian and Muslim militias in the capital of the Central African Republic of Bangui. The Red Cross said at least three people were shot dead overnight despite a curfew. Almost a million people have been displaced by the violence, and the International Organization for Migration is overseeing an airlift of thousands of foreigners who've been stranded. Gardaí have renewed an appeal for the public's help in tracing a 16-year-old girl who was missing from her home in Tramore, County Waterford, since the evening of Wednesday, the 8th of January. Margarita Golden, known as Maggie, is described as 5'8" tall and of thin build. She was last seen wearing dark or black clothing. Gardaí believe that she may be in the city's centre area of Dublin, and anyone with information is asked to contact Tramore Garda Station or any Garda Station.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Liberty Insurance. There for your emergencies morning, noon and night.
It'll be generally dry and sunny this afternoon, but will stay cold. Highest temperatures 4 to 7 degrees, continuing cold after dark with frost and icy patches. There's a warning that southerly gales will develop on all coasts of Ireland and on the Irish Sea. Clare.
John, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne. We welcome your views on any of the topics we're about to cover on the programme. You can text us 51551, email saturday@rte.ie. Our Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Now joining us today, we have Minister of State Alex White, Catherine Murphy, Independent TD. Dr. Teresa Reedy from the Department of Government at UCC is in our Cork studio and will be joined by others throughout the programme. First today, though, we're going to go to the Hospital Action Groups meeting because those groups from all around the country have come together in Dublin today with the aim of forming a national hospital action campaign to, as they see it, protect the health service. Now, today's meeting could lead to a national day of action. Meath TD Pather Tobin is one of those organising today's event, and Pather is on the line now. Pather, thanks for joining us. I understand the meeting is just about to get underway and You've pressed the pause button to speak to us, so we appreciate that. Can you tell us, first of all, what it's all about?
Well, first of all, hospitals all around the country are suffering from major cutbacks over the last number of years. And it's got to become a life and death situation for many people. Indeed, in my own county, seven people have died over the last 6 months in situations where ambulances were late in arriving to their emergencies. So our job is to highlight how critical this issue is. Up until now, the hospitals' campaigns have been working in a fractured manner. So in other words, it's been easy for the government to discount them on a regional basis and pick services up one by one. So the aim of this campaign is to bring all the hospital campaigns together, have a national hospital campaign, and raise the importance of this in the government's eyes over the next 6 months.
And what's the turnout like, Pather, today? You're at the Red Cow Inn, I understand.
Yeah, well, what we have, there's about 15 hospital campaigns who are so far supporting the campaign. And today's a working day. So what we've only asked for is delegates from each of those hospital campaigns to come down and sit with us and to work out our strategy, our objectives and our tactics over the next 6 months. Indeed, Bantry, Louth, Monaghan, Navan, Cavan, Roscommon, St. Luke's hospital campaigns have all sent delegates. And they represent tens of thousands of people. So for too long, this issue has been a regional or a local issue. And now we need to raise it to a national level.
And if you get to the point where a national day of action is held, how will that play out? How do you see that working?
Well, we've seen in the pylon issue, for example, for the last 6 years, the government has been pushing pylons in County Meath. It's been a regional issue. It hasn't really taken off in the national media's eye. But in the last year, the pylon issue has now become a national issue because it's in the rest of Leinster, in the West and in Munster as well. And now the minister is under major pressure on the issue. And that's the aim, to accelerate this issue from a regional issue to a national issue. And we would hope for maybe seven or eight local areas to come out in their thousands on one particular day. To show the government how important this issue is. We would hope to march in Dublin. We would hope to ensure that elected reps and candidates would sign a declaration in support of our objectives. This is so serious at the moment that it needs to be brought to a national level. We've seen, I suppose, $4 billion taken out of the hospital, the health service in the last number of years. 12,500 staff taken out of the service. And now we know that the cuts to happen this year are likely to happen with closures of ED, reduction in hours, or mergers of ED. And those decisions are not being made on the basis of patient safety. Those decisions are being made on purely budgetary choices that the government are making. And we need to make sure that our choice is further up the pecking order.
Can I ask you about your own involvement in this? I mean, is this a Sinn Féin event? Because you were cast out of the party, as people will remember, when you refused to toe the party line over the abortion bill. Is your time out almost over now? And is this event and this movement going to be connected to the party?
Well, first of all, this will be a cross-party, cross-community campaign. I'm the chair of the Save Navan Hospital campaign, which has very successfully defended services in Meath over the last number of years, and I've been particularly careful to make sure that all parties and none are represented in that organisation, and we will do the same in this. It is purely a cross-party, cross-community campaign, and I would invite people from all over the political spectrum to join us. And indeed, Dennis Nocton has offered his support and a number of other independent TDs.
Are you heading back into the Sinn Féin Parliamentary Party, though, shortly?
Yeah, I do. My objective is very clear, to return to Sinn Féin before February.
Okay, and we have the Minister of State from the Department of Health, Alex White, in studio with us. Do you see the need for this campaign, Alex?
I always see the need for people to want to defend their health services. And it is true that the health services have actually, you know, there has been an impact as a result of the economic collapse on the health services of this country. And there has been a huge amount of money that has been required to be taken out of the health services. And that has had an impact. I wouldn't seek to deny that. But what I would reject is the suggestion that Pather makes there, is that the government or the health service or the HSE has in any way undermined or in any way compromised patient safety. That is absolutely at the centre of all of our objectives. But the other point I would make about the politicisation, if you like, of health, because health is always very, very political, and there's no problem about that because it's people's, it's people's welfare, it's people's lives. It would be very wrong, I think, for Padder or anybody else or any of us in this studio or in the country to imagine that the health services are just about our hospitals. Now, our hospitals are extremely important. All of our hospitals are extremely important. They're actually at the centre of what we have to do in health. But we will not be able to sustain the health services in this country in the future, whether it's the Labour Party in government, Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, anybody else, if we imagine that we can do it through the old model of hospitals and hospitals only. We have got to move care into the community. We have got to actually resource primary care. We've got to develop primary care. And the politics of health tends to be about hospitals, unfortunately, because you can understand, for example, a hospital in a particular area, people may wish to defend it, and I wouldn't object to that, I wouldn't disagree with them. But we have to take a longer view about health. We have to take a view as a community about how we're going to fund it, where we put the money, how we raise the money. Is it tax? Is it insurance? How do people want to pay for it? Because it's this you and me and Padder and everybody else who'll be paying for the health service in the future.
This argument has been going on for a long time, and you think of the changes made to the cancer care services in this country under Mary Harney, which is when it started, and all of these arguments about protecting the local hospitals, we heard them all then. You're saying that's continuing now, and people are perhaps misguided about the importance of the local hospital and what can be done outside of it.
I wouldn't use the word misguided. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't criticise people. I wouldn't criticise anybody for defending the health services. I would just simply appeal to people, including Padder and everybody else, to see that it's not just about hospitals. That it's got, we're a country that needs to sustain a proper health service into the future. We have an ageing population. We have huge new demands. We have fantastic developments in health and healthcare. What can be done? Yeah. Marvellous things that can be done.
I just want to let Padder back in,
but
because in fairness to Padder,
in hospitals.
In fairness to Padder, I don't think this is just about hospitals, is it?
This is not just about hospitals. In fairness, obviously, the hospital is the first port of call for many people. But it shouldn't be.
That's the problem.
This is about ambulance service crisis throughout the country. And there's a phenomenal crisis. There are dozens of people in my own constituency who are lying in hospital today after having emergencies whereby they were forced to wait 40, 50 minutes, 2 hours for ambulance to arrive. This is also about medical card waiting lists. It's about hospital waiting lists for operations. It's about trolley counts. It's about the primary healthcare system that hasn't been kicked in, even though it was promised for years. And it's important to realise that, you know, the decision for the cuts that we're seeing now didn't come from James Riley. They actually came from the Minister for Finance. He was told, take this amount of money out of your budget because this is what we need to do for our budget choices. And these cuts are not based on the best needs of patients. The first responsibility of a government is to safeguard the well-being of its citizens. With the crumbling health service we have now, I believe that the government are not doing their job. This hospital campaign's efforts will be to refocus the government's attention on what's needed here.
Okay, Padder, I'm going to let you get back to that meeting. Before I let you go, while you were on your hiatus, I know you're still on it from Sinn Féin, were you approached by any other political parties? I mean Fianna Fáil, really.
I was approached by Fianna Fáil. They made two approaches to me. I spurned both of them. I don't agree with Fianna Fáil policies. I'm focused very much on, you know, the policies of a prosperous, united Irish economy, and Sinn Féin is the only vehicle that provides that opportunity.
I don't suppose the Reform Alliance were in touch, were they?
Not directly, but again, I'm not on the same page as the Reform Alliance whatsoever.
What does not directly mean?
A number of conversations were had, but I've told you that I'm not attending any Reform Alliance meetings. I am.
But we can draw from that the inference that the Reform Alliance would have liked you to come along with them.
These were very, very peripheral conversations. I wouldn't draw that conclusion whatsoever.
Okay, you're not going anyway. You're going back to Sinn Féin, is the message. All right, Padder, thank you for joining us. That's Meath TD, Padder Tobin there, who's at the Red Cow Inn with the hospital action groups coming together with the view to putting together a National Day of Action at some stage in the future. Now, we move on to the controversy at Irish Water, which is all over the front pages again today, set to be played out before an Oireachtas committee next week. Executives from the company have been asked to answer questions posed by the Environment Committee about that 50 €50 million it has spent so far on consultants. Our reporter Michael Lawless asked these people in Dublin what they thought about the consultants' bill.
Well, when you just look at that story today, you really have to just think that it's another example of the old ways of doing business where big companies are taking care of each other, big consultants are taking care of each other, and it does smack of a golden circle still existing in Irish society.
Wandering more public money?
Well, it depends on the relative budget of the company, but it does seem slightly excessive.
The rich are looking after the rich as usual. Behind everybody else's back.
Don't know if it's going to be good value for money, because I imagine much of the information that the consultants are gathering is information that's already known to the companies that currently run the water supply system.
I think if they're going to start charging us for it, it needs to be cleaner and purer, because I know there's a lot of chemicals and a lot of muck in it.
The money should have been spent on repairing the present network.
So I'm expecting that to be a complete mess regardless, so whether they spend €1 or 50, I think the outcome will be the same.
Why is that?
Well, they have stated that they're not going to replace or upgrade the pipes and that people have to find their own leaks. I would personally say that's outside my area of expertise.
I wonder if the Irish taxpayer get value for their money. It seems to be a golden circle all the time, getting all the money.
There won't be anybody fired here. Not when you're in a golden circle.
Well, the amount of water we waste in this country in the first place, and the amount of water we have, you know, we should be exporting the blooming stuff.
I'd hang them out to dry, the gallows, that's what I would suggest.
Why?
Well, I'm not sure what accountability there is.
Years ago when I was drinking, O'Donoghue used to sing a song called Only Our Rivers Run Free. It's a beautiful Irish song, very patriotic, not free anymore.
Not free anymore. Well, there you go. Michael Lawless speaking to people in Dublin. And it's an interesting juxtaposition. I suppose we're talking about the health service and the budget cuts. And the next minute we're talking about spending €50 million on consultants. Catherine, you're on the... You're a member of the Environment Committee, right?
I am indeed, yes.
So what's going to happen then next week that you know of so far?
Yeah, all I know is that John Tierney, who heads up Irish Water, will be coming in to meet with the committee, and clearly we'll be looking to grill him on where this €50 million was spent and the approach that's been taken. You see, there's a real frustration with the lack of transparency and accountability here. And people see, how tough it is. We only have to look at the credit unions survey and how much disposable income people have left. And they see their money being used in a way that they don't know if they're getting value for money. They don't know. We listen to that vox pop there. People are talking about, the lack of transparency, the lack of clean water, the first fix policy where you're going to have to find the leak yourself. I just feel that there's a lot of questions that we'll have to pose to try and figure out what's going on. You see, the problem is we're very good at this country at creating problems and then we try and resolve them afterwards instead of planning things into the future and anticipating how something should be done. For example...
Because the Irish Water would say, perhaps they would say, that this is what they're trying to do and this is why they're spending money, because they're setting up a huge new utility company.
Yeah, but look, we had very expert people, for example, in some aspects of what we're going to talk to John Tierney about. For example, people who worked in water and wastewater plants, for example, around the country, people who ran the systems, who were, for example, ended up on early retirements from the public service, who could have been retained if there was any kind of forethought, who could have been retained for substantially less money, I'm quite certain, would have had the expertise and are probably the ones that are now working for some of the consultancy companies. We can do things differently. We can do them more effectively. And can I say that we do need to invest in water. We do need to build a system that you don't have shortages, whether it's summer and winter. We are on a knife edge in particular parts of the country. There are issues in relation to quality of water and very serious issues in some areas. So there is a serious job of work that needs to be done. But the one thing that we can't do is waste money, and €50 million would have fixed an awful lot of leaky pipes.
But the money has been paid out now. That's the problem, isn't it? Dr. Teresa Reilly, I want to come to you in our Cork studio. I'm looking at Frank McDonald's piece in the Irish Times today. I'm not sure if you had a look at it, but he just sets out all of the money we've spent recently on consultants. If you look at the Railway Procurement Agency spending £165 million on Metro North, a further £19 million on Metro West projects that may or may not not happen. 32 million on the children's hospital plan for the matter, which isn't going to happen. NAMA, 143 million in consultants' fees, and so on and so on. What's your view?
Well, I mean, I think looking specifically at the Irish Water case, the thing at the moment is that we don't know whether the 50 million amount is excessive or not. We've been told by all of the politicians on all sides actually commenting on it that it is, but we've had no benchmarks. There's no reference to the costs of setting up utilities in other countries. You know, we don't know what it's cost to set up previous semi-state companies or even private sector companies. So at the moment, what we have is a lot of outrage, but without very much kind of informed structure in which we can actually make these types of evaluations. And it kind of tells us a little bit more about kind of in general how politics still operates, and that's that there's a kind of a short-term surface response to many of the issues. And in countries where you have crisis, you tend to have financial crisis management for a period of time. But the expectation is that you move into a cycle where you change the way in which business is done to prevent future crises. And that should require, you know, deeper debate, informed analysis. And there's no real sign of that happening here yet. So these people are going to be called from Irish Water are going to be called before Dáil committees next week. But I mean, based on what we've seen so far in terms of the public commentary on it, there's no great sense that there will be a rigorous questioning of them. In fact, it'll probably be much more surface questioning without really getting to the heart of the kind of facts and analysis we need to tell us whether this is or isn't the appropriate amount of money. And I think there was some interesting commentary yesterday from Eddie Malloy, who talked about the structural problems within the public service, and this is kind of another manifestation of this, the idea that we don't have people with very significant technical expertise within the public service, and we're constantly having to have recourse to consultants in all the different areas that you've just listed out there. But we don't get a lot of discussion about this point because it's not terribly interesting. Mm-hmm. And again, it's another example of a kind of a fundamental structural change that will need to take place, you know, to change and prevent these things happening into the future.
Mac has texted in to say this shows how our politicians think. Call the board in to account after the money is spent. It says it all about passing the buck. And that's what you say. It's about making projections, real projections, and sticking to them, as opposed to us finding out at this stage that the 50 million has been spent and we now have to try and find out where it went to. Theresa, just on related to what you were saying as well, I heard Barry Cowan making the point yesterday that the expertise we were told was there in Bord Gáis, the parent company of Irish Water. We were told that they were capable of organising the billing system, and yet now we hear that a lot of the 50 million, or certainly a portion of it, was used to pay for expertise on a billing system.
Yeah, but again, I mean, all of this should have been very apparent from the start, because when the tendering process went out and when it was decided that it was going to go to Bord Gáis, presumably the start-up structures were all included in that original structure. So, I mean, we're now told that 50 million has been spent, but surely that should have been known from the very, very start. And I think one of the interesting things is a lot of discussion about how this is commercially sensitive. But Bord Ishge is going to be a monopoly. It doesn't have competitors, so it can't be commercially sensitive. So much of this could actually have been discussed in public from the very outset. But I mean, again, the kind of bigger issue is that, you know, this happens time and again, and there's kind of outrage on every occasion, but little changes in the underlying structures to actually prevent these things happening into the future.
Alex, just want to come to you on this, because the government response hasn't been uniform on this. There's been different views across the board. Some saying, look, this has to be done. Phil Hogan defending it. Your own party leader saying that, you know, it needs to be explained. It needs to be transparent. And some people going even further, saying it's very unsettling. What's your view?
Well, I don't think the view expressed by the Tánaiste is in conflict or with what Phil Hogan said, or vice versa. I think that, you know, there is an expectation that there will be an explanation and, you know, clarity publicly as to you know, the breakdown of this figure. And Catherine's committee next week will start the process of ensuring that two main questions, I think, are addressed. And I agree with Theresa Reedy. It seems to me you can break it down to two questions. First of all, was the work that was contracted for actually needed? Is it necessary for this work to be done in order to set up this vast new infrastructure for the future of our water supply? And the second question is, given that it was needed and that it can be justified as being necessary, did we pay the right amount for it, or do we pay too much? Now, they're the two series of sort of questions that I'm
quite
sure.
What do you think?
Catherine,
what do you think on the face of it? 50 million
well, it's
in
impossible.
The space of 12 months here, for consultancy.
Here I have to agree with Teresa, and I have to agree with one of the people on the Vox Pop, and I have to say, quite honestly, I don't know. I'm not an expert in this field. I simply don't know what particular contracting parties were brought in, what sort of work precisely they were doing. They're the questions that if I was
people
on the
like
committee...
People like IBM, Accenture,
yes, exactly.
Ernst & Young...
Yes, exactly.
These are the people who are in receipt of
exactly.
those
monies. Exactly. And the advice, what John Tierney has indicated, and he is an exceptional public servant, somebody with huge experience. And what he has indicated, I presume, and his the people around him, is that we needed this work done now. Money spent today in order to save money tomorrow. An infrastructure put in place in our country once and for all, which was ignored for years, that we will have a reliable, efficient public supply of water to the people of Ireland and the businesses and the economy of Ireland for the future. Now, it does look like a very high figure of 50 million. Any of us looking at that, say 50 million looks huge. But if it can be shown that this expenditure of money now will in fact save huge amounts of money in the future because we have a reliable water system, well then I think it could be, I don't know, but it could be that this is money well spent.
Tell
I think
that
we
to the
have
people
to keep,
who are going to be paying between
telling,
250 and 300 euro per
you.
Annum for
I'm
their water.
I'm being honest with you, it would be easy for me to say 50 million, outrageous, no explanation, no justification.
Well,
I'm not saying
that. Think of what you could do with 50 million
I
in
know,
your department.
I can think of what we can do with 50 million. Of course I can. But I can also think about the shocking underinvestment in our water supply in this country. And this is about public investment. When we come out of a recession where parties of the left and the right, particularly at the left, say not enough public investment.
But Alex,
not
hang
enough state
on.
Investment.
We've spent 50
this
million. We haven't fixed
investment.
A burst pipe.
This is I know. This is the popular thing about we haven't fixed a pipe. We're not talking about laying a few pipes in a ditch here. We're talking about laying down a future public water supply system in our country. Let's get real about infrastructure in this country. Do we want to invest in our future or do we not? I think they're the questions we have to ask. I don't disagree with people who say in the Vox Pop or anywhere else, my God, 50 million, where is that going? But I don't make an assumption that it's misspent until I hear the facts. And Catherine Murphy is a TD for whom I have huge respect. She's on that committee and our colleagues. Let them ask the questions this week and let them get the answers. But let's not make assumptions about golden circles or anything else until we get the facts
but
together.
One of the people who text in there is absolutely on the money on this. It's after the event. I mean, when you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And for example, I've been hearing for months that there's been a kind of an informal or a behind the scenes structure there for the senior staff, local authorities anticipating some of the problems. You would have thought that would have happened way earlier. The reality of it is, and Teresa really is right, what have we got to benchmark this against? Even in terms of the legislation in relation to this, it was rushed through in the week before the Dáil went into
Christmas
recess.
Break.
There was no committee stage. That is the stage where you tease things out, where you get the answers, where you have the access to the minister. The committee stage was rammed through in a few hours, so much so that the opposition withdrew from the Dáil for that debate because that debate was really only more or less a fig leaf for what's happening. Now, that kind of thing has consequences. And it was exactly the same when we debated and we had lots of people in when the Irish Water was being debated about a year and a half ago and there was a report being produced by the committee. The problem was that the minister made a decision before we actually had concluded the report, and the report was published after that. Now, if you don't have a process that is a robust process, that you can anticipate things and say, not only the two questions that Alex is talking about here, there's a third question. And the third question, can we do this differently?
And did
could
you,
we have done this differently?
In that report, which obviously wasn't considered because, as you say, the legislation was put together before you'd finished it, but did you have a figure for start-up costs or was money broached in that report?
No, it wasn't. There were certain principles, for example, some of the things that are coming up here, that Irish Water should be subject to freedom of information. But when we had the recent Freedom of Information Bill, it wasn't included because the minister is saying that it will be included in the future. But you really needed that information in advance so as you don't have this kind of reactive type of you know, where's the money? It's gone. There's nothing we can do about it now. You would have had an understanding of what was going to be spent. You would have had an understanding that you were getting value for money. You would have teased out if it could be done differently. And I mean, like, for example, the expertise that is within many of the local authorities that have been running, in some cases, very good systems. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not all, you know, clapped out.
I mean, the whole thing points again to, you know, let's do business in a new way. That's what we were told by the Taoiseach at the last election. Now we have the Environment Committee wasting their time, Alex, putting together a report. And then the legislation happens before they've finished the damn thing.
I don't think they're wasting.
It was the announcement rather than the actual legislation. And then we didn't get time to deal with the legislation because of the way that all functions.
So your report was a waste of time?
Yeah, I there were some aspects of it that were taken on board, but I thought a lot of the work that we put in could have been put to far better use.
Okay, Teresa Reid, you wanted to come in there?
Sorry, just to kind of say, the recurrent theme through much of this is that our parliamentary structures don't work properly. There wasn't enough consideration at the initial phases. Parliament wasn't involved enough in the setting up. There are certain critical oversight mechanisms that aren't applying at the moment, like freedom of information. And I think then following on to next week as well, we now have the Environment Committee who are coming back at that. But there's a big question as well about how well resourced they are. Do they have the staff to go and do the research that's required so that we can have comparative analysis, so that we can have benchmarks, so that there can be an extensive investigation into these things? And you know, the recurrent theme underlying all of this is that Parliament isn't working properly. The structures aren't there. And this means that we're talking about Irish Water now, but these things will continue to repeat themselves into the future until we address the kind of fundamental way in which parliamentary business and the business of government is conducted.
Alex, would you agree with that?
I actually do agree with that. I think that our parliamentary system is still defective. I think it's improved a little. In fact, it's improved considerably, but it needs to go a huge amount further. I think people on parliamentary committees, as I was myself before I became a minister, do need more expert assistance and advice available to them. I think TDs, you know, conscientious TDs, as most are, if not all, want to participate and be involved in planning for the future, whether it's water or the health services or anything else. And our parliamentary system and our committee system needs to be geared for that. I would just make one sort of cautionary note, though, in relation to, say, like this issue of water. There's the big overarching question of legislation and how things should be done and whether it should be done nationally. And I personally think it should be a national structure. But then on the individual questions of contracts or specific, you know, jobs that have to be done within, you know, say, within Irish Water, there's probably a limit to the extent to which you would expect parliamentary scrutiny over this or that contract that would be given out. You know, you want to have a structure there that people have confidence in, but you then actually have to, you know, trust people and trust, you know, public servants to get on with the job that Parliament wants them to do and that government wants them to do. But on the proposition that the Parliament itself is still, you know, still not actually, you know, doing the job that we would all like it to do, I have to say that I agree with that. I'd like to be involved in improving the Parliament further.
Well, our producer suggests that perhaps we should get some consultants to look at that problem. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne. We're joined in studio by the Minister of State of the Department of Health, Alex White, Catherine Murphy, Independent TD, Dr. Teresa Reedy from the Department of Government at UCC is in our Cork studio, and we've been joined by Adrian Kavanagh from the Department of Geography and NUI Maynooth, and we're looking now at local elections happening in May, of course, this year. Adrian, when it comes to local elections, what sort of lessons can we learn from local elections that give us some clues as to the bigger political picture?
Local elections are interesting, Claire, because they do tell you something about the national picture, but they are different elections to national elections. They are local. You'll have other factors other than the national, what the national support trends will kick in. Local issues will have an effect on results in different constituencies. People who might be leaning towards certain parties, you may say, have dyed-in-the-wool Fianna Fáil supporters who'll vote for a Fine Gael candidate because they're the local person to them, and they believe they're a good councillor, mm-hmm. even if they're Fianna Fáil supporters.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Fianna Fáil, and I suppose it demonstrates that local-national divide perfectly well, because you say there is a national Fianna Fáil and a local Fianna Fáil, and they're very different in some cases.
Very different, Claire. In the last local elections, a lot of people might forget, that Fianna Fáil, while they didn't have a good result in the last local elections, it wasn't as bad a result as they had in the following general election. What's also interesting is there's probably two different Fianna Fáils. There's the Fianna Fáil in rural Ireland, where they're actually very strong at a local level in terms of their number of current county councillors and town councillors. And in some cases, they probably have too many local representatives, given that town councils have now been abolished and given that in a lot of rural counties, the number of county council seats has been cut. So there have been some very interesting convention battles with Fianna Fáil in rural Ireland. In Dublin, however, in the last local elections, and of course in the last general election, they had a very bad result in Dublin. That's not a bad thing, because if Fianna Fáil want to bring in new candidates, they now have a lot of scope in the Dublin constituencies, because they don't have many incumbent councillors. They don't have any sitting TDs now after Brian Lenihan's death, and they've only a few senators. So there's a lot of scope in Dublin for Fianna Fáil to bring in new candidates.
Okay, Catherine, you're running workshops, is that right? Teaching people how to run for local elections.
Well, actually, we ran a few in Kildare, in my own constituency, together with some independent councillors that I work closely with. And it wasn't that we expected to get large numbers, but we were being asked constantly for very practical information about how do I nominate, how much is it going to cost me, I do this in the community and I feel I could make a contribution, that kind of thing. So we felt that we'd give it, we'd put together some slides and invite people to come along.
So there is an interest there, yeah, despite the changes that are happening on a local level with politics in this country and the amount of power that these people will have.
Yeah, I mean, I think the aim was to kind of demystify things, and that you didn't have to have a party structure to contest. And indeed, there's a very large number of independents elected at local government level. Maybe a little bit short of 300, so it's at county council level, which is quite sizable. Mm-hmm. But essentially, we can't keep on having elections that are revenge elections. We have to have elections that are creative. And, you know, certainly the 2009 local elections, the Green Party were pretty much wiped out, and that was a kind of a forerunner to the general election. Indeed, I'm certainly hearing that, I think the point that Adrian has made in relation to the changes in numbers may well save the Labour Party, for example, from some of the impact that might otherwise happen. But there's certainly going to be a backlash against the government parties, and the Labour Party in particular.
Teresa Rita, do you agree with that? That the local elections is the time when you see the kicking. Ger has texted in to say the local elections cannot come soon enough, and I think that's a bit of a warning there from Ger. But is that what happens?
There are different dynamics, exactly as Adrian has outlined, at local elections. Yes, there's some of what we call kind of second order effects, where the government is evaluated. And I think we've seen in the opinion polls that the Labour Party is kind of coming out worse on that particular end. But it's also true that the local issues, and there's what we call a friends and neighbours effect, where, you know, the candidates, there are nearly 2,000 candidates at local elections, and it tends to, party ties are a little bit weaker. So your kind of community dynamic takes in there. So they, you know, there are countervailing forces. I'd also say that, you know, the opinion polls are painting a mixed picture at the moment, but there seems to be some suggestion of a small recovery for the government parties, and we just don't know how that will go in the next couple of months. So it's kind of all to play for, I would say, for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They're coming in kind of within 2-3% of the results they got the last time in the current opinion polls. So we'll see what happens with them. With the Labour Party, I think there are other layers of complexity in there, because, you know, they did much better in 2009. Their current, you know, coming in around 10%, so there's, you know, 5% gap between the poll position at the moment and what they received in 2009. But I think there's also the fact that there have been internal political problems. You know, you've had quite a number of defections from the Labour Party at local level. I mean, even just this last week, Dermot Looney, I think it is, stepped down from the Labour Party. So you're going to have complications in some places, where you're going to have former Labour Party members running against current Labour Party. So you'll have independent Labour and Labour, if you want, contesting in the same local electoral areas. And that could actually cause further complications and even reduce their vote, even more than what they're currently facing. So I think for the Labour Party, it's quite a mixed picture. It's all to play for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And Sinn Féin really do have the opportunity to do considerably better if the opinion polls are accurate.
OK, Alex, well, I'd come to you on that. If you hold the 10% that you're showing in the polls, would that be success for you? Or do you want the 15% that you had in 2009? Well, of course you do, but
of course we want the
15.
What
do you expect?
I expect that local factors, as the colleagues here around the table have been saying, will be to the fore in these elections. I think that the reputation of a councillor counts for a huge amount. And here I'd agree with Catherine in terms of, you know, a person who builds up a reputation and who works for their local community will do well in these elections, irrespective of what party they come from. From our point of view, I mean, we got somewhere between 14 and 15%. I can't remember the exact figure in the last elections. The opinion polls have us, well, there was one during the week, we were on 10, where I think we were on 12% a couple of weeks ago. We're within striking distance of where we were in 2009. I'm really looking forward to these elections, to be perfectly honest with you, because we've been out, we've got lots of new candidates, particularly young candidates, and particularly in Dublin, where, you know, the number of overall seats available to be filled in Dublin is now going to be considerably higher. And I think that's where we've traditionally been strongest, is in the cities, although we've some great people in rural areas as well in the country.
Cover all the bases, Alex.
I haven't mentioned any names yet, as you'll have noticed.
Oh, please don't. There are too many of them.
Look, it's what are all these words that are knocking around at the moment? Challenging and all the rest of it. It'll be challenging, but it'll be a good opportunity for us to be out to, you know, to talk to constituents, talk to the electorate. We've been doing that over the last few years.
Well,
it's become more intense now.
When you're the junior government party, that, you know, when you see people leaving rather than run under the Labour banner, that must be a scary prospect.
I don't do scary myself, I have to say. I think politics is about, the great thing about it is that, you know, it's up to the people to make a decision on election day. Some people have left us. A lot of the people who, by the way, the councillors, I mean, people go on about a big long list of Labour councillors who have left. Most, or a huge proportion of them, are town councillors. The town councils, you know, largely being abolished around the country. Some people not getting an opportunity perhaps to run in the county council or city council elections because they're already incumbents there. So there's a lot of local, you know, there are a lot of different factors in different parts of the country, as Teresa said, that will play. But I think the reputation of our councillors, particularly the ones certainly I know in the Dublin area, will stand to them.
Yeah, but the reputation will come from people who are incumbent. It's winning new seats that is going to be a very significant challenge. And I'm surprised that Alex is looking forward to these elections because certainly I expect that there will be a very sizable backlash, given that we don't traditionally see people out in very large numbers protesting. What the pattern of protest has been either to, and I hope it won't happen, stay away from the polls, but the other has been to show very sharp shifts in support.
Did you not say a few minutes ago that we should get away from revenge?
Yeah, but it
is. But that's not you that said that a few minutes ago.
It is revenge elections, but there's an opportunity here, but I don't see the opportunity for the Labour Party. I see the opportunity for independents and smaller parties, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think the demystifying of politics is really important. We need really good community people. Yeah. We have loads of them around the country. It's where we're really successful, but it's not where we often see our politics lets us down in terms of how we are at community level. And what we need to do is we need to try and encourage good people.
Absolutely.
Who are functioning at community level to contest elections.
And to work together.
Well, you were talking then about independents and smaller parties then taking advantage of the revenge vote.
Yes.
Okay.
Which she's against.
Adrian, I want to talk to you about what Alex said about Labour doing well in the urban areas and in Dublin and so on. The big challenge, though, is coming from Sinn Féin there, right?
Definitely. But you also have a challenge from the different left-wing smaller parties as well. You have the Anti-Austerity Alliance, who at the last count, I had them down, the 37 candidates selected at the moment. They include members of the Socialist Party. You also have the People Before Profit Alliance, who are... they have 23 candidates. What's interesting with them is they're now making a bigger effort to move outside Dublin. So the smaller left-wing parties will also pose a threat. What might be also interesting to see is whether, if Fianna Fáil are to make any comeback in Dublin, whether they could maybe regain some votes they lost to Labour in the last two elections. And of course, independent as well. So there's various factors. That's probably the main problem for Labour. Two main problems I'd see, other than the ones we mentioned before. the fact that there's so many different parties that are challenging for the traditional Labour vote. The other problem will be the vote transfers. Labour did very well in 2009-2011, obviously because their vote went up, but they were also did very well in terms of vote transfers. There may be a danger for Labour that they may face the same problems that the Green Party faced in the last two elections, that the vote transfers that Labour normally do quite well from suddenly dry up, and that might cost them seats. So that would be one particular worry, I think, for them.
OK, we'll take a break, Alex, and we'll come back to this in just a moment. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne. We were hoping to get through to Tehran today because there's a cross-party Iraq this grouping over there trying to foster trade relations between Iran and Ireland. And we wanted to speak in particular to one of the female members of the delegation to see how they were treated, because we were talking about this earlier on in the week here in RTE about how the Irish politicians, the female politicians, wouldn't be allowed to shake hands with the male politicians in Tehran. But anyway, we're having trouble with the phone now. We will try and get through. We're going to stick with the issue of gender, though, because, Adrian, you've been looking at the number of female candidates who are proposing running for election in the local polls. Tell us about that and the changes there.
Yeah, it's interesting, Claire. As everyone's aware, gender quotas are being brought in, but they're only being brought in for the general election. But there is evidence that there is there does seem to be an increase, a likely increase in the number of female candidates for this election.
Significant?
Maybe not majorly significant, but a notable increase. At the moment, I have 256 female candidates out of a total of 1,066 candidates. So that's 24%. It's not a big percentage by any means, but in 2009, that percentage was only 17%. Mm-hmm. So it's a 7% increase, and obviously well short of the 30% gender quota limit. But it's small progress, I'd add, but it's progress at least. What's interesting to note is where you see the bigger number of female candidates. And it's perhaps not surprising that in Dublin, for instance, 35% of the candidates are female. And you also see that Dublin also has the highest number of younger candidates as well, mainly because I suspect of this increased number of seats is offering an opportunity for newer candidates, not just female, but newer, younger candidates come on the scene there. In terms of,
is it seen as a way into the Dáil still, or is it seen as a career, if you like, for politicians who want to just stay on a local level, or is everybody trying to get along the line?
I think it's probably a mix of both there. I think you will have some new candidates there who obviously are looking down the lines, looking at a future Dáil career. But we have 949 seats at the city and county council level at the next election. Of course, there'll only be 158 Dáil seats and still 60 Shannon seats. So most of them will realise
that. Mm-hmm.
So I suspect a lot of the candidates will ultimately be looking no further than the county city council level.
Of course, the local structures have been reformed, vastly reformed. And Teresa, if I can come to this, you're from Limerick yourself, and Limerick has had, I suppose, is a great example of what's happening there with the amalgamation of the councils. Tell us about it and about the changes and how you see them, how the impact you see those changes having.
Well, there's been significant reform of the structures at local level, and we're going to move from having had 114 different local authorities down to 31, and we'll be left with 31 city and county councils. So the layer of town councils have been eliminated, and you've had amalgamations in Tipperary, Limerick and Waterford. And I suppose that the first thing to say is that I don't think there's been a huge amount of public discussion about this, and it's likely that the first that voters will know about these changes is when they go to get their ballot papers, and there are no more town councils, and the knock-on consequences will actually be after the elections. In fact, when people go looking for the services that were previously provided by town councils and find they now have to go to a higher level of local authority. I mean, the structures themselves have been criticised for many decades, but the approach that's been taken has been to kind of rationalise or to reduce down the number of local government structures, which is, you know, it leaves us pretty much at odds with many of our European neighbours. So, you know, if we look at the average
number of population or the average population per local authority area. You know, in France, there's about 1,600 people living in every local authority area, on average about 4,900 in Spain. In the Netherlands, is 36,000. And in Ireland, after the reforms, there's going to be 140,000 people per local authority area. So we're actually moving local government, if you want, away from the people, or creating larger local government areas. And really, the only other country that's doing that, if you want, is the UK. And we seem to perennially look to the UK as a guide to how to do our business, but without really thinking about that in any kind of informed way with regard to the overall structure of governance. In terms of the amalgamations, I mean, inherently they make sense, because there's been a lot of complaint for a long time, particularly around planning areas. And indeed, Frank MacDonald in the Irish Times has written extensively on this, on the way in which the kind of structures and county boundaries in the different areas have been very disadvantageous to the development, particularly of the city in Limerick. What's going to happen is that we're going to see the two local authority areas merged. In the merger, we'll actually lose five councillors in the course of the amalgamation. There was a kind of a plan done in advance for how the merger was to take place, and there are developments certainly on the way, but again, it's a little bit opaque as regards how it's going to all work out in the end. We're told that these mergers are going to result in significant savings, but at the same time, we also know that there aren't going to be any redundancies, and it's not entirely clear how the entire structures are going to be fully operational in the aftermath. But aside from the kind of the mergers, I think the kind of bigger question is, you know, whether or not there is going to be additional powers devolved to the local authorities in the aftermath of the you know, the new structures being implemented. Certainly, the government document that was published indicated that there would be new specific functions allocated to the local authorities, but it's not terribly clear, or certainly there hasn't been a lot of detail on those, aside from the areas of enterprise policy and development policy. And the other thing, of course, is really the most important part of all of this, is the financing of local authorities. You know, the revenues from the local property tax are supposed to go to the local authorities. The local authorities are supposed to go, are supposed to have some leeway in terms of the rate that the local property tax will be levied at. But we already know that the government has reneged on the first of those commitments, and the full local property tax revenues aren't going to the local authorities this year. So it's a very mixed picture with regard to the reform. It's good that there is reform, because, you know, criticism of local government has been going on for decades. This spirit seems to be towards devolution of powers, but we're lacking in detail. And I mean, the worrying thing is that already there has been reneging on the financial side.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting picture. It's a developing picture, if you like. You know, where is the power going? Where is the money going, I suppose, yeah, more importantly? Catherine, are the same issues coming up locally as are nationally when you're talking to people who are interested in running, or are they very, very local, specific to say where you are in Kildare, for example?
Yeah, I think they're not terribly dissimilar. But some of the things, for example, that the points Theresa makes there in relation to the loss of the town councils, some of the town councils, not all of them, some of the town councils actually did quite sizable work in terms of building communities, for example. My own experience was in an area that developed in recent years. I live in Leixlip, and I was on the town council there for years, and I think that's going to be, for example, acutely felt the loss of services. For example, support for the like of tidy towns, festivals, things like that. The softer services that really do enhance an area, that build a community rather than building houses, if you like, is what I've always argued is what is done. That doesn't actually happen to the same extent at county council level, which is much more focused on hard services like developing roads and footpaths, street lighting and things mm-hmm. like that. That would be more at the focus of the county council. The other thing is that there's huge imbalances in terms of even staffing, and there's no doubt that there's a need to decentralise decentralise. And I would see that as a process rather than an event, if you like, that you would need to do that on an incremental basis, but it would have to be matched with the funding. If we're going to take this excessive localism out of national politics, we really do need to have an ongoing programme of decentralisation of functions. But it can't be done without people, and it can't be done without the accompanying funding. And in many cases, in countries where they've really good local government system, in actual fact, much of their national taxation is spent at local level.
Alex, is the reform about saving money?
No, it's not principally at all about saving money. I think the government should be given credit for introducing the first set of really, you know, substantial reforms to local government that we've ever seen. Certainly we've seen since, you know, 100 years that our system has been in place. And I think it will take time. And Catherine's right, it is a process rather than an overnight event. I think that you can accommodate within local authorities that sort of local identification for a particular area, for a particular town, particular village. I think that can be done, and I think it should be done. And we should devolve powers, and we should decentralise, real decentralisation, not the nonsense that we had a few years ago where we were talking about, you know, moving services down the country that really belonged
in the capital.
But actual decentralisation, and it does involve money and it does involve resources. And I agree with Catherine that. But I was going to make one final point about you know, the independence, if I may. And Catherine, as I've already said, I think is an excellent independent TD. But 20 years ago, when we looked at Irish politics, there were very few independents. It was one of the things that was striking about our system, how few independents there were. What's actually striking about our system now is the number of independents that we have. Mm-hmm. There have never been the same number of independents in Dáil Éireann that we currently have.
And there may be more.
Ultimately, I would say, you know, certainly in terms of national government, perhaps not so much in terms of local, or that will emerge. We do need, you know, political parties form governments.
Whip systems.
You know, that's the way. Yeah, absolutely. I would over a whip system in many circumstances. Independents are fine, but parties form governments.
We're out of time. I just want to bring you this comment from Fintan Reddy, who says, if 2 billion is to be saved in water services by Irish Water over the next years, why is there a need for any consumer water charges? That is a good conundrum to end this week. My thanks to all of our guests. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening. Saturday with Clare Byrne was produced by Peter Woods. The researcher was Leslie Anderson. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. And sound supervision today was by Barry Kavanagh.